Yeah, well, that's... All right, here we go. Let's go. Reggie, you're set? I'm set. Let's do this thing. Get going here. Okay, here we go. I'll give you the three S's. I'll give you the countdown. You give me the music. I'll give you a podcast, and we'll get this thing wrapped up. What do you say, huh? All right. I like the way those needles are bopping there. We're in a good mood. Going to have some fun today. Let's get started. You ready? All right, here we go. Star, smile, strong. Write it down in the book. Episode 249. We're getting close to 250. I don't know what that means, but we're getting close to it. All right, you ready to go? Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com, or we are found wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there, as well we should be. And don't forget, with listening to this podcast comes responsibility. It's not all just fun and games. I got a job to do, you got a job to do. I do the podcast, you help spread the word about the podcast. So send your friends a message, send them a link. Friends, family, whoever you know, spread the word that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. And why the heck isn't it everybody's? Your loyalty and your devotion. And doing that little smidge of an extra thing. I'm not asking for a lot of effort here. A couple of strokes on the keyboard, that's all. A couple of cut and pastes? Is that too much to ask for this weekly hour of entertainment, information, and quirkiness all rolled up into one ball known as the Elton Jim Captain Podtastic Experience? I don't think so. If you like what you hear, don't forget, go to WGNRadio.com, go to the podcast section, click the prompt for this podcast, and you will find all previous 248 episodes. I don't know what it means. I don't know what the significance of it is, but we are getting close to 100 or 250. But we're not there yet, so let's not jump the gun. So welcome to episode 249. So close. I don't know what the significance of episode 250 is or what it will be, but it sounds like an impressive number, doesn't it? 250, and then I believe by 260, we will probably reach the five-year anniversary of this podcast. Now, that seems to be have a little more meat to it. 5 years is a long period of time. So I get that. I don't know what's 200. I guess 250 is impressive because it's more than 230, or it's more than 200. And we like, you know, round big numbers like 50. We like things with 0, 25, 50, 100. We like that. We like increments of 25 for some reason. 170. No, you know what's so funny, though? That's not true. We don't really like 175. We like 25. We like 50. We will celebrate 75. But we like 100 a lot better. I think we like 25, 50, and 100. I think 75 is kind of the stepchild of them all. We like it, we accept it, but we don't make that big of a deal about it. I'm sorry if you're a stepchild. I don't mean that in a bad way. I'm just saying, you know, it's not like the prime thing. We love 50, the 50th anniversary, the 25th anniversary, the 100th anniversary. 75 is mentioned, but it's not, sometimes it goes by the wayside, it's forgotten. Somebody's age, yes. But 75, I don't know. I don't hear a lot of 75-year anniversaries of things, of events that are made such a big deal about. When it's 50, we make a big deal. When it's 100, we make a big deal. 25 is a big deal, I think, just because it's on its way to becoming a big deal. So we point that out. Hey, it's been 25 years. And we're still talking about it. Could this be important? And then if it makes it past the 25-year barrier to 50, then we automatically bestow it with importance. 50 years is important. We love a good 50-year anniversary. And then I guess maybe the same applies then with 75. So then we go, okay, we know it's important. It's made it to 50, but is it really important? I mean, is it really going to be remembered? So we acknowledge the 75, but we're waiting for the 100 to validate, because then anything that's remembered for a 100-year anniversary is clearly is important to us either personally or as a society. So maybe 25 and 75 are kind of the middle ranges there where we're still deciding. They're both little speed bumps on the way to the biggies. The biggies are 50 and 100. We've got to get to 25 to get to 50, and we've got to get to 75 to get to 100. And so at the 25 and 75 hurdles, we take a step back to reflect and to commemorate, but we don't really go, you know, pedal to the metal celebration as we do on a 50 and 100. So that said, I don't know what that means because I'm not at, well, but at 250, I guess that's impressive then, right? 275 will be, you know, if we get to that, it'll be interesting, but then 300 will be a big deal, right? So I guess 250 is a big deal because we like a 50. It's a nice big number. It's got a 50 in it. We love 50. And it does certainly show a sense of longevity and ongoing sustainability. So at the very least, it means something. I don't know what 275 will mean, but I guess 250 is something that we should be proud of. But we're not there yet, so we can't get premature eproudilation, if that's a word. I was not, let me see, I'm looking at my script here. You know, this show is very scripted, very tightly scripted. I'm looking here, but I called an audible, and I went off script. I'm looking on here, and I don't see anything on the script that says get into a semi-detailed explanation of the importance of 50, 25, 75, and 100 anniversaries. Nope. That was just right off the top of the cuff, folks. Wasn't reading that. Now I'm reading this because now it does say, if you go off topic, here's how to get back onto topic. That is in the script because I frequently do that. So I write that into the script that if I will go off topic on something, the script helps me get back with some handy transitions. Like here's one right now. That said, seeing that transition gets me back. That said, thank you for listening. And here we go. If you believed any of that, then I've got some swampland in Florida for you. No, that's not what I came here to talk about today. I'm not talking about the anniversaries and why they're important. But we are approaching 250. So perhaps I will have a deeper discussion when we reach that number. Right now, we are one away. Welcome to episode 249. It's already been stellar, can't you tell? If you're still listening, if you haven't shut off the podcast, I promise you the next, 42 minutes or so? No, what am I talking? 51 minutes here as I look at my counter. The next 50 minutes will be worth your time. I realize that the first 10 may have been taken up by the anniversaries and why they're important segment, but I promise you there's more content than that. And now I will go to my transition. That said, here it is. See how nice you get right back on the track? So here's an interesting, what I love to do with the podcast, you know, on most of the time is really, you know, just make observations that occur to me or that happen to me, and share them with you. Maybe there's something that you can relate to that you go, oh my gosh, I do the same thing. Or you go, wow, I never really thought of that. Or, wow, how the heck did you get that out of that? And that's all of that thrown into the big kettle is what makes, hopefully, which makes this podcast interesting to listen to on a weekly basis. But we'll see. You tell me, right? So recently, my wife and I were sitting around the house, and I had forgotten that a relative's, how funny is this? I didn't even think of this. So I was talking about anniversaries, right? Is this ironic? So I shouldn't even have told you that, because now I've sort of let you behind the screen. I could have really covered this up and said, well, the reason I talked about anniversaries is because it ties to my story. I wish I would have thought about that, because it really does, but I wasn't that quick to even connect my own dots. See, you're seeing the sausage being made, folks. I always try to do that, you know, be honest with you. Let you see behind the curtain. Let you see the great Oz. We all saw the great Oz anyway, right? Oz, don't forget, Oz never did give nothing to the Tin Man that he didn't already have. I'm Casey Kasem. Keep your feet in the ground and keep reaching for the stars. It's ponderous, man, ponderous. So, here's my connection to the anniversaries, even though I didn't intend to that first segment to have any connection. I don't need that transition anymore, because there's a natural transition. So forget I even pretended as if the first anniversary discussion was completely off topic, because now it is not off topic. It is actually on topic and relates to one of the main topics I want to talk about today. Even when I don't know what I'm doing, I still know what I'm doing. Wow. I continually impress myself on a regular basis. So, my wife and I are sitting around, and we had forgotten in advance, far enough in advance, of a relative's anniversary. And we still are old school when it comes to celebrating things with people, and we do like to send a card. Now, I know that people still send cards because, you know, at Walgreens and department stores and even grocery stores and even stores like Hallmark, they sell cards. They still sell them. So somebody's buying them, or they wouldn't make them, right? I mean, in a capitalist system, if something is on sale, that means someone's buying it. And if it goes away, that means nobody bought it. So somebody's buying cards. Now, I don't know. Do you get cards? I get cards sometimes, not as many as I used to. I've talked about my Christmas cards. I get a few birthday cards, not as many as I used to. I still like sending cards for different events and occurrences, you know, because it takes a little extra effort than writing an email. We have become so dependent on that we just, oh, well, happy birthday, blah, blah, blah. Oh, I'll send an email. But, you know, if you're going to send a card, there has to be some advance recognition, A, of the event, and B, preparation to make sure that card gets to the person on or before the event, because then it's belated. And there's nothing worse than sending a card that doesn't say belated on it, but it becomes belated. I mean, if you're going to send a card and it's going to get there after the event, then you should go and not buy the card, but buy a belated card, because your original card will be belated, but it will not have belated on it. And then it will just look like you blew it off or you forgot, which is worse. At least when you acknowledge your belatedness, You're acknowledging, oops, I had forgotten, but you know what? I just remembered. But if you send a card and it gets there after and it doesn't mention belated, it just kind of shows how disorganized you are. And to me, that's a huge sin, being disorganized. Oh, whew. That's worse than being belated. Being disorganized is worse than forgetting in my world, which gives you a little hint as to how weird my world is. But yeah, so I believe that not only is a card a nice gesture, it's showing that you're thinking about this person and whatever event that they are experiencing. So you're thinking about them, and then you're going out of your way. It's not climbing Mount Everest. It's not a big deal. It's a small gesture. It's a small token, but it does have some intrinsic value. I thought about you. I either went out specifically in thinking about you to buy this card, or even when I was at the grocery store or at the department store, I still took my card out of whatever section I was in and went to the card section thinking about you. So the whole idea is I'm thinking about you. And I would assume that hopefully that message is tied up into the card itself. Some people take a lot of time choosing a card, and they read, you know, all the insides and da da da. And I do too, but I don't go crazy. Some people go crazy, and they really, you know. And then if you don't react to the card in the way that you expect them, that they want you to expect, they almost feel like, well, geez, did you read it? Yeah, I read it, but you know, I mean, at the end of the day, unless it's a blank card and you fill in your own little greeting there, I mean, that same card is being used by a lot of people, and those same sentiments that you're sending to that person are being sent to other people. And you know, there's tricks in the trade there. The greeting card people know what kind of phrases work that appeal to us and make it sound like that card was written just for Uncle Sam, or just for Aunt Betty, or just for my wife, or just for my mom and dad. My gosh, that card nails them to a T. And the card companies know exactly the buttons to push, because that same card, they're not just selling that card to you. They're not just waiting for you to buy that card. Because if you don't buy it, they still have to sell some. So that's why there is a certain impersonality to a greeting card, because it is written in a universal way to appeal to a large audience so that many people will buy the same card, even though it feels and sounds very personalized. So you have to look through that. You have to look past that. And I usually, in a card, I will add my own little, a little added message just to, once again, make it more personalized and to show the person I'm thinking about you. I'm not just going to send you a manufactured sentiment that somebody is writing for the mass public. These are nice words and they may apply to you, but then I also try on the inner cover of the card. Most of the time that's blank. The main verse kind of starts on the cover and then gets completed on the right side, and that left side of the card inside is blank. And so then I will usually add a little added message, something more personalized, just to say, yes, I like what this card says about you or our relationship. It's nice. It's relevant. It does seem to pertain to you or my feelings toward you. But at the same time, it's also written in such a way that it can appeal to many people, and it's kind of impersonalized. So I will then go that extra mile and add a little personal message in my own handwriting, and I usually put my initials at the end to let them know that I wrote that, even though I assume they know. But so just to make it a little more personalized. So, you know, once again, taking the first gesture of the card is a good gesture. You can't beat that. It's a nice gesture to send a card. But then I try to add, you know, a little cherry on top of the greeting card sundae, which is to add a little personal message in my own handwriting pertaining specifically to that person with something that that person and I know about between us. And then you can take that other, you know, card, you know, greeting or message that's in the card pre-printed as a nice little, you know, compliment. But, you know, the two should work together. But I think, you know, I like adding that in. So the whole idea here is obviously to, you know, give somebody a little acknowledgement. But as I said earlier, you really have to go and go the step further. You pick out the card. It seems to be a nice card, nice front. You like the front. It's either funny or sentimental or whatever it is, depending on who you're sending it to. Sends the right message. It also gives you perhaps a nice lead-in to add your personal message so that you stay within the theme of the card. But you also have to plan ahead. Okay, I've got the card. Now I have to make sure that I know the date that I am celebrating for that person. And if I'm mailing it, I've got to make sure that it gets there on or before the date in question. Now, that's a little harder than it used to be these days. I don't know about you, but the mail seems to be a little less predictable than it used to be. You could usually say, oh, I'm sending a card over, you know, within your state, you know, a few, you know, 30, 40 miles away. And you could say, yeah, you know, it's probably going to get there within 2 days. Well, I don't know if you can count on that now. So in my world of organization, as I said before, you have to err on the side of earliness rather than later, because your card will become belated and look like you are disorganized. That, the last second I remembered and I just threw it in the mail and it came there 4 days late when the person even forgets they had a birthday. Or they, you know, what's this card? I'm getting a birthday card a week later? If it doesn't say belated, then, you know, there's obviously chaos going on that other end of the card. They couldn't get their act together. So I will now, I literally will sit there. If I'm going to mail a card, I'm going to say, okay, look, and this is where my day planner, you know, all this comes back into play here. That's why I have my day planner. And even though there's not a lot of plans on it for 2021, there are specific dates of birthdays and anniversaries and things like that on there for people. And so at the beginning of every week, I open up my day planner to see what's on there. And if it's like, okay, you know, so, you know, Frank's birthday is next Saturday. Okay, then that means I have to get a card, and I have to mail that card now. I have to say, if they're within a 40 or 50 mile radius, you have to expect at least 3 days. Now, I don't know if that's good or bad, and maybe that's too long, but in today's mail world and everything else, I think that's pretty much to be safe and for it to get there. 3 days is the minimum, and I would even say 4 days. Sometimes I will mail it 5 days in advance just to make sure. And at Christmas time, certainly you want to do it, you know, early. But if it's a regular kind of in the middle of July birthday for something, I will send a card 5 days before to somebody if it's their birthday or anniversary. Maybe it gets there in two, maybe it gets there in four, but hopefully it should be there before five or at least on five, so it's there either on the day. And I'd rather be early than late. I don't want to be late. So those are just tips on sending your card. Make sure you have all your dates somewhere so you know that you can buy your cards. Now I know some people, I want to give you a big hug if you do this. Some people are so organized. We are some to some extent, but mostly not. Some people buy a block of cards for different occasions, so they always have them on hand. Now I think that's awesome. That's really nice organization. I give you gold star on that if you do that. You know, you buy you know, five birthday cards, for five for a male, five for a female, that are, you know, and anniversary cards. If you have those and you can go through those, if you have a lot of those on hand, it's you're less likely to miss an event. Now, you still have to remember the event, but at least if you remembered in, you know, a couple of days before, that you don't have to run out and buy the card, and maybe you can't get out that day or something, you can't get to the store, blah, blah, blah. Now you've missed your window of opportunity. But if you have that card on hand and you can write it quickly and get it in the mailbox, you have your chance. So if you're ultimately, I would suggest that you buy, like, you know, 50 cards for all different events, all different sexes, all different events, and you have them just waiting. And then you have your dates. In fact, if you really want to be organized, at the beginning of the year, now I've never done this, but I'm just thinking about it, and maybe this is fun and something I think about. What I might do, and I still have time to do this, it's only February or March right now, what I might do is go through my daily planner right now and find all the days of which I will need to buy or send a card for somebody that I know, whether it's in my family or a friend. Anniversary, birthday, whether it's my wife or my friend or mother-in-law, whatever it is, I might go out and make that list. I'll go through my day planner, find all those people and dates, write that list down, take it to the grocery store or the card shop or the department store, and I may buy all the cards that I need to send out between now and the end of the year. And I may put them in order in the month that they occur. And I, what I even may do, now that I'm thinking about it, once again, you're seeing the sausage being made here, folks. These ideas are coming to me as I'm speaking. What I may do is I may paperclip these cards into the month that they correspond with in my day planner. So there is no way I'll forget this, because as I turn the page for April and May, all of a sudden I'll see a card in there. Maybe I'll see two cards in there. I have to get a clip. I can't get a paper clip. I'll need one of those black, you know, clips that you open up and clip on. They fold over. You know, those black clips, those big hefty clips. Maybe that's what I'll have to do. My day planner may be filled with clips. But maybe I will go through my day planner, find the people and the events I need cards for, write those down, go to the store at one clip. I'm going to have to buy these cards anyway. Why go the day before? Why go the week before? I can put them in my day planner. I can have them there, at the very least a list that I will check on a regular basis. I will already have the card bought. In fact, once again, organization, I can already have the card addressed and stamped and written in. I just have to wait to mail it. In fact, once again, thinking off the top of my head here, so maybe here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go, all right, write this down, everyone, because I think this is a great idea. I'm going to do this. I'm going through my day planner. I'm going to find all the occasions that I need. Now, granted, there may be some that happen indiscriminately. Somebody has a child. I can't plan for that right now. I might not know that by December, right? There might be a party or some event that I'm not aware of, like a birth. Like I said, that's usually one, or a marriage. You can't predict that. You can't predict a passing away of a sympathy card. But the ones, you know, your anniversaries and your birthdays or something like that, you can predict those. Those are etched in stone of the ones that are existing. So what I may do, and, you know, your Valentine's Day or whatever those are. So I may go through my day planner and find all the specific dates that demand a card with the date or the holiday and the person it gets sent to. Maybe, and for some people, the event, you know, demands two or three cards to be sent to three different people for that same event. Whatever the case may be, this will take some thought. It's not just some random thing here. And what I may do is buy all the cards at one time. I may write my little message inside like I do. Now, maybe I won't seal it because maybe something will happen and I would want to add something in there. Maybe I won't write my official note, but maybe I will. We'll see. But what I would do is at least have those cards ready to go and maybe even put them in my car, because that's the next level. It's one thing. How many times do you write a card and you even stamp it and address it and the whole thing, and then you put it on the counter and then you forget it? And it sits there for a couple, 3 days. You go, oh, geez. And I was out today. I could have dropped it in the mailbox. I rushed out of the house. The card was sitting there, but I didn't take it. Well, if it's in the car, chances are you won't forget it. You'll see it if you put it in a spot. So I have to think, maybe I will pre-address, pre-personalize, and maybe even seal and then put them in the car. And I have to think of where I'll put them in the car that I will think about it. But I will always be checking my daily planner. So that might be, I don't necessarily have to put it in a very outward spot in the car. But as long as it's in the car, the chances of that thing getting taken to the mailbox certainly increase, because I'm already in my vehicle when I'm running my errands. And thankfully, I don't live too far from a post office. So that might be the way to go, to always assure that the card gets there before the date. I like that. Once again, for you folks, that's on me. Take that advice. Take my entire process to heart, or take pieces of it. But if you want to send a card, I think that whole little process there's enough there as a complete process that you can just implement. Or if you think it's too anal retentive and a little weird and a little over the top, which it may be, but it sounds normal to me, then you can pick and choose. Take some part of it that you like and say, well, that's a little too obsessive, I won't do that. But that idea, blah, blah, blah. But if you send cards, I think that's a very sound advice there. And if you don't, perhaps I'm influencing you to maybe get in the habit of sending cards, especially in this COVID world. You know, we're trying for more communications and more personal, deeper connections with people. It's not a big deal, but as I said, I think when I get a card, I feel like, wow, that person took, even if it was 5 minutes, they took 5 minutes out of their day they didn't have to think about me. And that's why, even at the end of the day, when I make this big deal about whether we're going to send Christmas cards out, I think, you know, I try to be a hard ass on this stuff. But at the end of the day, I doubt if I'll ever stop sending Christmas cards. I may have to break my own rules, even though I sound like I'm being, very hard line on that. At the end of the day, I enjoy sending them out and I enjoy getting them. It's fun. And even, as I said, I mean, Christmas cards are kind of obligatory. A lot of people send those, but a lot of people these days don't send anniversary cards or birthday cards. But all I know is when we get them, we display them. We have them on our kitchen counter for about, a good week. And if they're fun cards, we save some of them. But we keep them displayed at least for, you know, the event, and then a couple 3 day, well, whenever we get them, we'll put them on the counter in a certain spot, and then we'll keep them up at least to the day of what is being celebrated, and maybe even a couple days after. But, you know, being anal retentive as I am, usually the next day after the event, they are taken down. Whether they're thrown out or they're saved depends on the quality of the card or how well they're, you know, who it's from or what it is, it says. But we certainly display them, so they must mean something. It's kind of a lost art. Not completely, but it's getting there. As everything goes digital, as everything goes online. You know me, I'm old school. And so I think there's something to be said for that, right? You could say, geez, you're behind the times and you're out of touch. But you know what? I'm also in touch in my own way by clinging to some of those cool traditions. Anywho, so the idea of the card now has been established, right? So we had, and wow, I didn't expect, well, I did according to my script. But so yes, I did not expect to have that nice little discussion about buying the cars in advance, but I'm liking that a lot. The whole point of that discussion, though, branched from the initial point that we had forgotten an anniversary. Now, it wasn't past the danger point of us mailing the card and it not getting there in time, but it was right on the cusp. You know, I was counting the days, and there was a national holiday that you have to, you know, don't forget, if you're mailing, don't forget any national holidays. You have to add an extra day because there's no mail delivery. So always keep that in mind when you're counting your days. 3 or 4 days for a card to get there. Make sure you're not sending it over a period of time where there's a national holiday and there's no mail delivery and you're not counting it. It's fine if you count it, but make sure you count it. So in this case, there was a national holiday. President's Day was in there. So I was like, oh boy, got to throw an extra day in there. So we were right on the cusp. So Johnny on the spot, when I remembered it, I went out and bought a card and said, hey, we got to send this card out. But then the weather was bad here in Chicago. We've had a lot of snow over the last several weeks. And at times it's been very treacherous even. And so then, and you know, sometimes you don't feel, even though the post office is not all that far to drive, it's those times when you do these little small errands that are within, you know, 2 blocks from your house is where you get in trouble. Your car stops, you know, get into an accident. So, you know, especially in bad weather like that. So I said to my wife, you know, I don't know if, with this holiday here, we're going to be cutting it awful close, and God forbid if it gets there the day after or a couple of days after, then, you know, your whole gesture has been somewhat diminished, like I said earlier. So I said, you know what? I don't know if I really feel like going out right now to mail this, because if it gets mailed tomorrow, it will not get there. And by this time I remembered, and it's like I know the times that the mailbox near my house by the post office, I know the times of the pickups. That's how scary I am, folks. I know it's at 12:15 and 5:15. And so it was like 4:30 in the afternoon. I'm like, okay, I can go. I have time. We live close to some stores. I have time to leave right now, buy a card, come back. We both sign it, because I always believe we should both sign in our own hand. I've done it sometimes too, don't get me wrong. But I always think that if you're going to send a card from two people, they should sign it individually, not just have one person sign it. Then it kind of looks like the other person wasn't really, you know, didn't really care, wasn't really involved. So I always sign my name and then have my wife sign hers. so it looks personalized. Once again, the key is to personalize these cards as much as you can because, as I said before, they're not personalized when you buy them at the store. They are deliberately made to be universally used. So the more you can personalize it by adding a message, like I said, or having each person sign their individual signature, at least it helps, once again, to personalize it and show that some thought and some time was put into this for that other person. But now I was cutting it close here. I had to go out and buy the card, come back, you know, sign it, stamp it, address it, and then get to the post office all within about 45 minutes. It could be done, but it was going to take a lot of hustle. So I thought, well, you know what? Maybe I'll just, because this person doesn't live that far from us. Only about a 15-minute drive. So I said, you know what? Maybe rather than going through all this rigmarole just to get this thing in the mail by today so we know it'll get there, maybe I can go tomorrow and buy the card, you know, don't have to rush. And then, like the day before or so, I'll just drive past the person's house and drop it in the mailbox. Right? Now, you could say, geez, Jim, you why wouldn't you, you know, if you're going to do that, I mean, you know, visit the person. Knock on their door and say hi. This way you don't even have to send a card. I mean, I guess in theory, right? Wouldn't a personal visit even go farther to show the person that you are, you know, remembering them by visiting them as opposed to sending them a card? Perhaps. But, you know, in this COVID world, you know, you don't really do the, you know, don't do the drop-in as much as you do, right? So I said, no, for it might be best if we'll just, I could just drop the card and I'll just go drop the card in the mailbox. Well, my wife looks at me aghast, which is a usual look that she gives me. But this time, it wasn't just out of you know, everyday, you know, astonishment. But she was reacting to what I said, that I would go and drop. I'll just go drop the letter in the mailbox. And she said, well, you know, that's against the law. And I'm like, what? What are you talking about? It's against the law. To drop a letter in a mailbox? And she says, yeah, you can't. You are, that's illegal. Illegal. To drop a letter in the mailbox. You, us, all of any of us. A non-postal worker, she said. That is against the law. To go and drop a letter in the mailbox. Well, I never heard of this. This sounded crazy to me. And come on, I mean, don't you see in your mailbox that there's, you know, people drop flyers in there, or if there's something about that's going on in the block, you know, like a block party or something, or there's a message or something, you know, that the people in the neighborhood are trying to, you know, a petition or something like that. People, or sometimes I've even had, hey, you know, I, you know, in my mailbox, hey, you know, hi, it's Tom. I stopped by. No one was home. I just wanted to say hi type of thing. Now, that was before COVID, right? But still, I mean, the mailbox is a receptacle for mail. Yes, it's in the title, right? Mailbox. But it's also a receptacle for messages, a conveyance of communication, right? Which is what mail is, too. But I mean, but non-postal related. At least that's what I thought. So I mean, I completely was just like, "What are you talking about? That's ridiculous. That makes no sense at all." Aren't I charming? Aren't I just a joy to be with? But I was like, "No, that. What? Where did you get that from? That sounded so crazy to me because I have used the mailbox, and others have used my mailbox." For these other kind of communications without ever thinking about it. Well, she was adamant, and to her credit, she went online, and so as I was, you know, laughing her off, that's an outrageous statement. She's reading to me, I guess. I don't know where she got it from, but she read it from somewhere, whether it was on the post office or something. But she Googled it, and it said it is a federal offense to put any unstamped mail into, or any unstamped letter, any unstamped correspondence. It is illegal to do that and to put that in a person's mailbox. I was shocked to hear that. I don't know, and I also have to question it, but it's on the books, and there's a pretty good fine for it too. It's not just some, you know, so I guess what the post office is saying is that, you know, you can't just use the mailbox to get your message without, you know, spending the money for the stamp. If you're going to get your message across, just like you when you know, call somebody, you have to pay for that. Now, what surprised me about that is that that's my mailbox. It's not their mailbox. I mean, I bought that mailbox. The mailbox that's on my house, I bought and I installed. The post office didn't do it. Some people when the house that I grew up in, we didn't even have a mailbox. We had a slot. I don't even know if that's even, I mean, that doesn't seem to be that prevalent these days, but there we had a mail slot in our door. And the mailman or the postal carrier would throw the mail in that slot, and it would fall on the floor by the front door. Remember those days? Depends. I don't know, you know, your age. I don't think that really happens anymore. Most people have a mailbox either next to their front door or out by the street or by the sidewalk that's detached. But I don't know if they even have the slot in the door anymore, mailbox type of thing. But apparently, so I find this an interesting law. How can the post office control my mailbox on my house when I bought it? It's my mailbox. It's not their mailbox. If it was their mailbox, then they would buy it, they would install it, and they would have a key for it. And they would like if you're at a P.O. box or in an apartment where there's a big bank of mailboxes, and they come and they have got the key and they put everybody's mail in there, then they lock it. Okay, that's personalized. There, that's still not the post office's mailbox, or maybe it is. I don't know all the rules of this, but certainly in my house, that mailbox that's on my, I installed it. I told you before, I'm not a big putterer. And I'm still shocked every time I see it that the mailbox hasn't fallen down, because I actually had to drill a hole into the brick and put that in there. So like I told you the story before, several years ago when I installed a light fixture, I couldn't believe that every time I turned the light on, it didn't explode. I must have done it right, but I still never really believed I did it right, even though I must have. But the same thing with my mailbox. I installed that mailbox. So why does the post office have any rights to what I do with my mailbox? I don't know if a majority of people know that they are not allowed to put any unstamped communication, letter, or anything in your mailbox. Do you know that? I had never heard that, but look it up. It's if you Google it, it's there. It's against the law to do that. I'm shocked by that. As I said before, we get regular things in our mailbox, notes from neighbors, hey, there's a block party in a month type of thing in the mailbox. In fact, I've always felt, because I do this, I've done this on occasion, I always feel very weird about it, so I stop doing it. But when you get a letter delivered to your home and it's the wrong address and you get someone else's mail, now, once again, this is illegal. I believe. It says that you are not supposed to deliver and you are not supposed to put anything in that mailbox. That is the Postal Service's job. So you're trying to be a good Samaritan, right? Someone sent you, you know, the mail, you got the wrong letter delivered. And maybe it's your next door neighbor. Maybe it's somebody on the block over the same address but different street. That's happened quite a bit to us. We always get the same person. For some reason, we get this person's mail. Maybe they get ours. I don't know. But I used to go to their house and drop it in the mailbox, right? Just being a nice guy. But then I always felt weird about going up to somebody's stairs and putting it in their mailbox, and maybe they're looking out the door going, who's this stranger coming to my door? So now when we do get delivered someone else's mail, I'll put a little sticky note on there that says wrong address, and I will stick it in the mailbox so the mail carrier sees it. And that's actually, and I thought I was sort of being, you know, kind of a recluse, unfriendly neighbor by not just going across the street or wherever and dropping it off. But that actually is the correct way to do it. They don't want you to go to the mailbox. Even if it's been stamped and delivered in the wrong place, they want you to have the mail carrier deliver that piece of mail. They don't want you to be doing it. But more importantly, they do not want you using the mailbox for your personal communications. Apparently, according to the post office, if you're going to use that mailbox, we needed to have delivered that and touched it. And at the very least, gotten our 55 cents or whatever the heck a post a stamp is these days. I think it's still 55. You know, you buy these forever stamps now. You don't even know what forever means anymore. You know, some stamps that are kind of cool stamps, I bought, you know, I did buy them forever. I bought them 5, 6, 7 years ago, and I still have some of them because they're kind of cool. And they're still good. So that's not bad. But I think it's 55 cents. I don't think I've heard about it going up. But anyway, they want to make sure they get paid their whether they stamp it or not. But you cannot put an unstamped letter. That's what this said. You cannot physically put an unstamped letter into another person's mailbox.
In the words of Johnny Carson, I did not know that. That's weird, Ed. Very weird.
I did not know that. My wife, I don't know why she knows that. I don't know where she heard it, but she did, and she was right. And I had to bow to her knowledge of that. Just that one time. But I was not aware of that. So now I'm thinking about all the times that we have gotten stuff in our mailbox that apparently a lot of people have been breaking this law. As I said, we've gotten, you know, flyers, and we've gotten, messages from people, like block party, blah, blah, blah. Oh, did you find my cat? Whatever. In my mailbox. That apparently is against the law. Who would have thought that? And I don't really understand that because, like I said, that's my mailbox. It's not theirs. If they want to control my mailbox, then they should buy my mailbox. They should install my mailbox, and they should have a key to my mailbox. But if I bought it and installed it, and it's on my house, and they had nothing to do with it, I don't understand why they have jurisdiction against this little black mailbox that I bought. It has no lock on it. So I have to take umbrage with this law. It's an odd law. But I guess it's on the books. So now I'm thinking, how many people on a regular basis, even in my life, are breaking the law and they don't even know it? Like, for instance, we have a landscaping service, and when he cuts the grass, he gives me a bill at the end of the month, but he puts the bill in the mailbox when he's done cutting the grass, and he puts the bill in his envelope that has his, you know, his logo, his business stationery, you know, address and everything on. It's a business. It's not a business size envelope. It's a letter envelope, but it has his business on there.
And he's got my name, but he doesn't have the address. There's no stamp. He just puts it in my mailbox. Apparently, that's against the law. I doubt if he knows that. I doubt if most people know that. But if you put a block party notice or if you in somebody's mailbox by their house, that's against the law. If you're trying to find your dog or your cat and you have a little flyer made up and you fold it and you put it in somebody's mailbox, that's against the law. I'm baffled by that because, in fact, perfect example. So we've had a lot of snow here the last couple of weeks in the Chicago area. And I've told you that I'm, for the most part, I'm still shoveling. And I do have a snowblower, but it's an electric one. It's very small. It's not powerful. When I bought it, I was a little younger, and I figured, you know, I'm not going to buy a snowblower. Now, I don't want to buy one because I don't know how long I'm going to be staying at this house and maybe even in this location. So we had some major snow here. We got about 12 inches of snow. And we have a huge long driveway that goes, you know, from the middle of our yard all the way to the street. And I've talked about this before, but anyway, so there was so much snow that, I mean, thankfully my neighbor was nice enough because the snow has been piling up, you know, the stacks of after shoveling, the banks that are 7 feet tall. You can't even throw the snow with a shovel anymore. The banks of the snow are so high from shoveling. And when I went out to shovel last week or so, I expected this to take 4 hours. There was so much snow. It was so high. It was so deep. Thankfully, it wasn't heavy, but it didn't matter. It was heavy enough just because it was there, and it was everywhere. And I dug out our front driveway and our walkways, but the thought of our driveway from the sidewalk all the way into the yard and after having done what I already did, I was like, this is going to be a four-hour job. Because, of course, our driveway, when the plows came through, just threw, and I'm not even exaggerating, about 4 feet of snow was blocking my driveway. And then it must have happened overnight, and it got hard. It didn't freeze totally, but it got hard enough where just maybe a two feet stretch from the opening of my driveway to where it opens up to the street to inside of the driveway off the street there, 2 feet long stretch was 4 feet high. That alone took me probably a half hour to do. Not the whole driveway, just this 2 feet because the ice or the snow was so high from the plows just pushing it to the side. I don't understand that whole, but that's a whole other discussion. But anyway, thankfully, my next door neighbor saw me shoveling, and he's got a snowblower. And he said, hey, if you want to use my snowblower, go ahead, you know. So I said, oh, my God, thank you so much. So I was able to snowblow the driveway, you know, from the sidewalk in the front all the way to the back. And, you know, it's kind of a wide driveway. It took me, you know, a quarter of the time. I'd still be out there shoveling. I mean, it would have been crazy. But anyway, so I was very appreciative, and it was very nice of him to do that. And so I just put, a couple of bucks when I brought the snowblower back. I put a couple of bucks, you know, on the snowblower in his yard. It says a thank you, you know. And so he came out and his wife and I said, hey, just, you know, thank you so much again. You saved me a trip to the emergency room because I probably would have had a heart attack if I was shoveling for 5 hours. I said, so thank you. I said, you know, buy yourselves a pizza or something. Thanks a lot. You know, I appreciate it. And they said, oh, no, you don't have to do that. That's ridiculous. You know, I said, no, you gave me, the gas and you let me use it. You know, I mean, you saved me a lot of time and effort and it's much appreciated. And thank you so much. And please, you know, make a donation to your favorite pizza parlor on me. And they're like, no, we're going to give you this back. We're going to put it in your mailbox. Well, I didn't want to get into my whole mailbox discussion, but I was like, don't go by the mailbox. You can't put money in the mailbox. You can't even put a letter. God forbid, you know, some money in the mailbox. And then I was thinking, like, so then I was checking the mailbox to make sure, A, I didn't want the money back. I wanted them to keep it. But B, I wanted to make sure that if they did, if they were, you know, if they just felt uncomfortable about, I wasn't going to force this money on them. But I also wanted to make sure that I took the money out, because then either the mail postal carrier would think that that was for them, right, as a way of communicating. Or what if somebody else came by who doesn't know the law, doesn't know the rule, and they came in and dropped some flyer in my mailbox and saw a 20 in there and just, you know, and grabbed it. Thankfully, they kept it. I'm glad they did. But suddenly this mailbox and it being a point of communication between people, I'm like, I know that they don't know that. Once again, I'll drop it in your mailbox. How many times do you say that? I'll drop it in your mailbox. You can't do that legally. I understand that there's no, you know, postal police standing by people's mailbox, but it's on the books. You cannot put something in somebody's mailbox. Wow. You learn something every day. It pays to be prepared so you don't have to go and put it in somebody's mailbox. Plan ahead. Put a stamp on it. Drop it in the mailbox. No problems. No dramas. No law breaking. And your mail will get there. I don't agree with the law. I believe that is my mailbox, not the post office mailbox. But if it's the law, we'll do it. So the lesson to be learned, don't use your mailbox like it's your mailbox. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Don't forget, every Monday a new episode is posted at WGNradio.com, or we are found wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. Don't forget, send a message, send a link to your friends and family telling why you enjoy Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic and why they should enjoy it too. Your loyalty and your devotion and your effort is much appreciated. Hope you've enjoyed episode 249. I'm Jim Tirano. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of the web to your screen. Now remember, you cannot put a letter in another person's mailbox.